Well, the world is a dumpster fire. Nothing here makes sense. And you vacillate between crippling fear and constant self-defense. And nothing's right and nothing's good. And you're paralyzed with grief. Don't kill yourself, just have a cup of coffee.
Welcome to Coffee Over Suicide, the dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death one cup of coffee at a time. I'm your host, Chris Parker Howard, and I'm a little overwhelmed right now, but in a pretty positive way. I have put myself out into the universe and said, you know, is anybody listening? Does this resonate with anybody? This weird journey that I've gone through with my mental illness and my mental health and trying to put myself back together in a way that's going to work. Because honestly, I want to be here. I want to figure this out and I want to ride this thing as best as I can for as long as I can while completely recognizing none of this is forever. And always being open to the idea of change. But change is something that I've never really managed all that well. Positive, negative. My first reaction to any kind of change is fear. I don't know why that is. And knowing that about myself, you think I'd be aware of it when it happens. But I'm not always. I got a lot of things on the horizon that are pretty big. And I guess we'll see how they shake out. But ultimately, the first thing I wanted to announce is that I've gotten such a positive response to the show that I now have a backlog of conversations that I've had with people that is completely unmanageable. And that is why, starting this coming Wednesday, the show is going to twice a week. That's right. I'm going to be putting up episodes on Wednesday and Friday. So we'll see how that goes. I hope this is something that I can maintain, but I'm going to be honest with you. This might just be for a few months, because the conversations I've been having with people, it's a lot to take in, because every single person that I talk to, I'm here and I'm present. And I'm taking in everything that they're saying. And maybe it's not the healthiest approach. Again, I'm not a therapist. You know, I'm a good-natured dog. You know, I just want you to throw the ball with me for a while. That's it. That's all I'm doing here. And to have these deep conversations with people, it can be difficult to take all of that emotion, all of those thoughts, all of those feelings, and just breathe them out at the end. I still haven't gotten real good at meditating. It's something I'm working on, but I haven't quite nailed it just yet. It is a process, like everything else. And I've been having 2 to 3 conversations with people a day and recording them and storing them. And it's really difficult to keep it all straight. But, the conversations have been amazing, really amazing. And I'm so thankful to everyone who's listening and everyone who's agreed to talk to me, including today's guest. And this one's going to be a little bit different because normally we go through a whole thing with a person and where they're at. And this was a person that wanted to have a conversation, but they didn't necessarily want to have a conversation, you know, with their real identity. So this is going to be different in that regard, because today we are talking with Detroit DJ Distant Lover. And without me yapping on and on about how the conversation went, let's just listen to it. You and me.
Nastrovia.
So right out of the gate, how are things going in Detroit right this minute?
Oh, Detroit is lovely, man. We're going through this gentrification thing that's not making a lot of people happy, but it sort of has to be done. I mean, the census has always been off in Detroit. I always laughed and said, you want to get the true census, go see how many Comcast cable bills and everything else. You know, you can track down the people, but, you know, Detroit's the type of place where the census people come knocking at the door and nobody answering. But everything's going pretty smooth. Just came from the Planet Funk's party, their 313th episode, 313.fm. Give a nice shout out to my brethren. Yep. So everything is lovely on that tip. The music is still flowing like wine over here.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing about Detroit is that it doesn't really matter how hard things get. There's always been that undercurrent of artistic expression that comes out of all of that.
You better believe it. It's a hotbed. I mean, I am so blessed to be living and growing up in this city. I mean, I often think, like, what if I grew up in some podunk town in Ohio? You know, my life would be completely different.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you get shaped by everything that happens to you. I mean, your whole personality as a human being is based on so many different things. The first time somebody told you no shaped your personality in some way. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, every little aspect that you had any shape in choosing how you were going to react to it is ultimately the collection of thoughts and experiences that make up who you are.
Well, there's definitely not a whole lot of people telling you no in this city, man. I mean, it is definitely the freest place in the United States. If you got a dream and a little bit of money, you don't even need the damn money. You can make shit happen here. It's like, I got a recording studio / club in my basement. I got a fire pit in my yard, and I'm living smack dab in the middle of the city.
Yeah, man.
Do whatever you want.
Well, let's take that. Let me take you back just a little bit, because I'm curious about all of that. I mean, growing up there, what kind of kid were you?
I was a really loving, outgoing kid. Really happy. I had a great childhood. A lot of experiences. My family was on the East Side, and the East Side was great. It didn't really turn into the Wild West until the late 80s, after crack hit. And then as I started getting older, you know, things started setting in. A lot of the seven deadly sins start seeping in early, and you start feeling awkward about your body, and maybe a little bit of jealousy seeps in, or I'm not like this guy. I mean, I was always sort of tall and a little bit awkward, but I was involved in sports, and that kept the agility and the coordination. So, but no, I was a really happy child. Great loving family, great support system, good friends. I still say to this day that my support team and my circle is my strongest tool in my toolbox.
Yeah, well, and growing up with supportive people around you, it seems like it wouldn't be very difficult to reach out if you were having any kind of problem, because you'd have people there.
Yeah. Oh, no, for sure. There was good communication growing up. I always like to push the envelope, though. I mean, it's like ever since I was young, it's definitely a lot more fun on the wild side.
Yeah.
My mother was a little bit of a hovering parent, so getting one over on mom was a favorite pastime, you know, going to going away to so-and-so's house where they had HBO and watching stand-up, you know, Richard Pryor and George Carlin and Def Comedy Jam and Sam Kennison, Red Fox. I mean, between my father and Richard Pryor and all them, I have them to thank for my prolific vocabulary.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I probably wouldn't know half the words that I know now if it weren't for George Carlin.
Yeah. I picked up some of it.
You know what I mean? Like Carlin and Pryor especially, because they were really thoughtful and really funny.
Totally.
Like there was a lot of depth going on there, especially with Pryor in those first couple of records. I mean, that was an incredible time. That was really something.
It was.
So
yeah,
for you coming up in a situation like that, I mean, being tall, honestly, that sort of makes it difficult to be invisible anyway. And so you have to discover who you're going to be publicly because everybody can see you.
Mm. Well, on top of that, my mother was very involved in the school system. She was a lunch lady. She was involved in the PTO or PTA, whatever it is. And she went on to be involved in the school board. So I got to learn politics at a young age. And so I was very visible. And I didn't like it. That's for sure. I'm an underground type guy. I like to give me a big dark room with a huge sound system, and I'll go hide and do my thing, you know.
Yeah.
And so, at a very young age, it was difficult being on the spotlight. Plus, I'm the oldest, so things came down a little bit harder on me, I'd say. My brother got the pass. Well, I mean, I definitely exercised my parents a lot. So by the time they got through with me, you know, it was a little bit easier on my brother, I'd say.
Like they were just exhausted and said, fuck it.
Well, see, my mother would fight the devil himself for her family, so she's never exhausted. But definitely, I push some boundaries. I'm a boundary pusher by trade.
Well, like what? I mean, what was the kind of shit that you would get into?
Oh, anything and everything, man. I mean, Devil's Night was a big holiday when I was younger. You know, go raid the old man's. The old man's tomato garden and whatever else was laying around in the fall and go explode it on some garage doors and firecracker fights and just being crazy kids, man. The 80s was a wonderful time.
Well, the first time I mentioned Devil's Night to anybody out here in Denver, they looked at me like I was fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Like they'd never heard of that. And they were like, why would anyone do that?
Well, I mean, it's I kind of like it, but Detroit has that real sort of sinister thing about it, you know. Yeah. Like we love to burn shit and cause havoc, and it's just a grittier, edgier town, and it's you just deal with it. It's a little bit on the rougher side. I mean, living in Detroit's kind of like an abusive relationship, you know. You keep coming back for more, but it hurts so good.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've traveled the world, and Detroit and Berlin are the two places where I feel absolutely comfortable. I mean, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love it. And it's not anybody's job to be correcting the next person. I mean, whatever you're doing, just keep doing it. Just don't be an asshole and involve other people or whatever, and it's fine.
Yeah.
So the level of freedom is nice. I really enjoy it. And I'm the first person in my family to move back into the city during the late 80s, early 90s. Crack got real nasty and pretty much everybody took off. But even at as soon as I got wheels under my ass, I was heading to Detroit for a show and, you know, the music and arts and all that stuff. So
yeah.
Yeah,
there's
it's a good
draw
time.
To a city. I mean, especially Detroit at night is a a really amazing place. It's like it comes to life and just starts crackling. You know, it, not always in a good way. It certainly doesn't always feel safe, but it always feels interesting. And I mean, and I'll tell you this: there's not a lot of good places to get Mediterranean food in Michigan, but Detroit, you can find some really quality stuff.
Yeah. Well, we have the largest Middle Eastern population this side of Baghdad. Mm-hmm. Actually, little known fact about that. So, I mean, I hear the call to prayer every day on my balcony. Only other place in the world I went to where I hear the call to prayer that often is Berlin, because there's a huge Turkish population there. The sister cities, it's definitely a good connection there. It's a double-edged sword. So, I mean, it's a tough city, but it's also very beautiful. It's very easy to make connections, and you're arm's throw away from whatever you need.
I have to wonder, though. I mean, how do you think all of the hustle affects you?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, the hustle is whatever you want to make it. You know, like I said, if you want to sit in your backyard with a fire and chill out, that's totally fine. If you want some insanity and party till dawn, I mean, that's there too. It's pretty much whatever you want to make it. I'll tell you, I've always been. I haven't been sitting on the bench in life, per se. I've been very, very active. And the thing about it, you get going in this pattern, and that's really all you know.
Yeah.
And it's so you keep going at this pace, and then when the downtime happens, it gets a little bit more uncomfortable as it progresses. Yeah. And when I hit my teens, it started getting pretty serious with family issues. My father's a habitual felon, going through his malarkey and just dealing with the early adolescence stuff. And it started getting heavy in my mid-teens, early teens, I'd say. And it didn't really let up until maybe a few years ago. And it's almost like PTSD in a way. And I developed a lot of coping mechanisms that I didn't even really realize I was doing. So you go through life just sort of reactive, and it really takes a toll on you. And then you sit back and say, like, wow, you know, I've been smoking weed all day, every day for 20 years. What's that about? Or I'm constantly busy. What is that about? And when I say it's like coping mechanisms, they can be positive, of course. Yeah. And I've had a lot of artistic outlets through music and shows. I mean, I was addicted to concerts for the longest time, and I mean, I'd be going to a couple heavy metal shows a weekend sometimes, and out to Pine Knob. I mean, you name a band and I've pretty much seen it. And then people say, like, oh, wow, you know, you live such an interesting life. And it's like, oh, I don't even know any other way.
Yeah.
And so it gets to the point where you're just worn out. Yeah. And so I pretty much hit the wall about a year ago. I was at this music festival, and I found myself just sitting on the sideline, just exhausted, saying, like, I can't even do this anymore.
Yeah.
And so it's a lot. It's a lot. And this last year in my life, I've taken my mental health pretty seriously and demanded some change in my life and taken a hard look on what's brought me to this point. And I gotta tell you, I mean, if you got people out there, if you got some shit going on, you need to deal with it and you need to face it, because you keep putting this stuff on the back burner and it's gonna boil over. Yeah. And it really did for me.
What did that look like for you? I mean, there's only so long you can start turning your negatives into positives. I mean, you know, keeping yourself busy and the coping mechanisms that you put into place, all of those things are really good at keeping you away from actually trying to solve the problem. I mean, they're really good temporary solutions. I mean, you can get fucked up and have parties with friends and go to shows, and you can do all of that for a while. It's just not sustainable, because at some point in your life, you're going to have to sit with a little bit of silence. And if you haven't dealt with your shit, silence is deafening.
Oh man. I started meditating pretty seriously this past winter, and
Me too.
I've always been into yoga, and I got into yoga from a girlfriend in my mid-20s, and I really liked it. Being a lengthy guy and involved in mosh pitting and concerts and dancing all night, you know, your body starts feeling it. And so the yoga really helped. But as I'm going through the yoga, my mind is still scatterfucked, and it's going a million directions. And so when it came down to meditating, I was dating somebody that meditated, and I went to some of their practices, and it was like, whoa, man, that was scary shit. my mind's going all over the map. And, you know, it's like a friend told me one time, yeah, I meditate to find out how I'm feeling that day and how crazy I actually am at that moment. Because, like you said, the silence is deafening.
Something rises up to fill that void, and it's usually not anything positive.
No.
You know, if you've got things to deal with, I still have problems with that. You know, I used to think that I had to sleep with a fan on because I got tinnitus from playing the drums for so many years. But I think that it's just so I don't have to hear myself think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, ever since I was very young, there's always been music in my life, and that's a positive outlet.
Yeah.
But when the music's not there, what do you got?
Yeah.
You just got your headspace, and things start getting pretty weird. And which, you know, I love weird. It never gets weird enough for me, honestly. Yeah. I've seen so much and done so much in my life that there's not much that surprises me or even jars me.
Right, and I know,
you know
that about
introspective.
You. So with the idea that, you know, you seem to be pretty comfortable with uncomfortable situations. You seem
I'm
to
a
be
pro.
Like very, in fact, maybe even more comfortable in uncomfortable situations.
No, you're absolutely right.
So, I mean, with that being the case, when that silence starts coming in, What is it telling you that you don't want to hear?
Oh man, I mean, you know, it's just like the anxiety rolls in. You know, anxiety is the wicked stepmother of depression, and I'm reading this book right now about anxiety, and it talks about positive anxiety and negative anxiety and how we roll with it. And I've never really taken a look at anxiety before. It's like my family, my father's family has a long history of mental health issues, and my brother is bipolar, and I've seen him in a manic episode before, and that was the first time I've ever really firsthand experienced that. But I get these little bursts of mania where it's like I'm real productive and I'm getting shit done and everything's great.
Yeah.
And then I get burnt out, and then all of a sudden it gets dark and it gets ugly. And so, I mean, I would say, like I said, I've been going pretty hard since my teens, and it sort of hit the fan this past summer last year, where I've had to just like, okay, pump the brakes, let's get serious about some counseling here. Let's get in with the meditation. Let's try to get more introspective and sort of figure out why I do certain things and what's behind it all.
Yeah.
So I still might be doing these things to a certain degree, but then afterwards I take a look at like, okay, this happened and how I reacted to this and what happened here. And so, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. It's a definite battle within.
Have you gotten any kind of actual, diagnosis?
There wasn't really like an official diagnosis other than obviously depression.
Yeah.
And so, what ended up happening, this past summer, the summer before this one, was that I just came off of, a really productive winter. So you're talking like winter 2017 to 18, and, did a lot of good yoga, was working in the studio, doing some music stuff. And then, I went on a trip. I was, multiple cities in the United States. And then I went to Berlin for 2 months. And in Berlin for 2 months, I went through a pretty interesting breakup and, just was pedal to the metal. And I came back right before Movement Festival, and I've worked at Movement Festivals since 2004. And so it was like, I hit the ground running when I came home, when I was already exhausted and spun out. Yeah. And so hit the ground running. We give, I do Detroit tours. So we did the tour, worked at the festival, then came another festival I was working at. And then come, midsummer, was just still going gung-ho, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, about early August, I was at this festival, and it was just like, I cannot do this anymore, and I am spun. So I got a corporate job. Thankfully, a good friend of mine helped me out with that, because, I mean, I was in no shape to interview for anything, like freaking janitor at the zoo would have turned me down from where my headspace was.
Yeah.
And so I just started working from there and, demanded some serious change in my life. So
that is a lot though. I mean, to go through years and years and years, I mean, especially without any kind of, formal diagnosis, it's a lot easier for things like that to sort of slip through the cracks. So if you are a person who's prone to depression, or even have a touch of bipolar, which, you may or may not have.
Right.
It's one of those things where if it goes untreated, you'll find a way to treat it, you'll fill that hungry hole with something.
Mm-hmm. Well, filling hungry holes is my specialty, whether it be mine or others.
I knew I could count on you for that.
Hey, they don't call me distant lover for nothing. So the reality of it is, though, man, I was just really lucky that my self-medicating didn't cause more issues than it really did. It's not normal to be rolling a joint while you're taking a shit in the morning.
Yeah.
And smoking them like they're cigarettes. It's like here in Detroit, weed is like free. So it's just everywhere and it doesn't even matter. So, I wasn't even taking a look at it. And so, I mean, the first real sign that I need to figure something out happened a few years back, where I was involved in this show and things didn't go the way I liked it. Went through a couple buddies had just died that year, and it just all sort of came to a head. And I was like, wow, I need to start drawing boundaries with people and discussing mental health with my family. And it's not easy. I mean, you talk to your family like, hey, I've been depressed on and off going on for half my life.
Yeah.
And they look at you like, what? I mean, it's like coming out as bisexual, which I went through, and it's it's difficult. I mean, you know, you put on this like Instagram face for everybody and this social media vibe, and you know, it doesn't cut it. And so people don't like it when you draw boundaries with them too. You know, you're like, hey, I'm an adult. I'm not going to be doing these backflips for you anymore because it just doesn't make me happy. And they don't like that. I mean, I've had people tell me, like, you need counseling. Well, yeah, I'm in counseling. Yeah, so no that shit. Doesn't. Yeah,
most people
that
need counseling.
Yeah, but that doesn't negate the fact that I'm not going to be your monkey anymore either.
Yeah.
So it's like, take it somewhere else. And so.
But having that level of protectiveness about yourself. It has probably been good for keeping you alive and keeping you moving, because in a way it's a self-preservation.
Yes.
That innate toughness that's required to be where you are has probably served you really well.
Well, I mean, you got to do what you got to do. And it's like, I've had a tremendous amount of loss in my life, and I've gone through a lot of roller coaster rides, and through it all, I got to the point where I couldn't cry, even when I needed to or wanted to. I'm at like a loved one's funeral and different situations, and not being able to cry, it's like having this huge balled up, I don't know, pressure cooker inside you.
Yeah.
And it just can't come out. And so that was pretty wild to take a look at that. And then it would come out in weird ways. You know, I'd be driving down the road and all of a sudden, boom, I get this just uncontrollable fit where I got to pull off the road and sort myself out. So it's ugly. And that's why I say, you know, like if you got some stuff going on in your life, deal with it at the point in time. I mean, because it's not going to go away. It never does. It'll manifest in different situations. I mean, it's like after my father died, went right to Meijer and bought myself a fifth and put my shit to bed, but that didn't help anything. I mean, but it was an excuse to use.
Right.
I mean, you know,
oh, yeah, completely.
It's like, oh, well, I'm supposed to drink this bottle right now, you know,
right.
But the reality of it is,
right.
As a man, this is what we do.
Yeah.
And that's fucked. And so the reality of it is, communication is good medicine. Yoga, meditation, you know, combat it with love, not addiction and darkness. And so.
Yeah, but that's a hard thing for you to teach yourself. It's not really a thing that you really can teach yourself super effectively. Eventually, you've got to get help from somewhere, because I mean, you can only lead yourself down paths that you would think of. You know what I mean? It's like at least buy a book, you know, something where you can get some outside ideas, even if those ideas are not ideas you're interested in pursuing. It is helpful to have other ideas than your own, kind of get you to start thinking about what it is maybe you need and what it is you weren't getting in the first place. But it is a process. It's not a Rubik's Cube. You don't get to solve it and then feel better. I mean, you got to carry it around.
It's an ongoing struggle for sure. And that's why I really appreciate what you're doing so much, because this shit needs to be talked about. It needs to be discussed and looked at, because there's no other way. There really isn't. I mean, we try to backpedal and shift here and shift there, but facing it head on is the only way.
Yeah. I mean, I've come to terms with a lot of things that I wasn't really aware that I was having problems with, because I started seeing a therapist again. And I'm talking to the therapist, and as I'm saying things out loud, sometimes I realize what they sound like. You know what I mean? You start telling somebody about a situation that you found yourself in as if it's something that everyone does. as if it's something everyone is worried about. And then you just realize, oh yeah, this sounds really awful.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And, you know, we hurt the ones closest to us, but then we're also deaf to the ones closest to us. Like me and my friend, my good friend Linda G, we have this ongoing joke, like, we need an expert. I need an expert. Well, who's an expert? Anybody that you're not close to.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, you're going to value their damn opinion more than the people that you love and care about, which is fucked.
Yeah. You know, so, I've heard it said, you know, you have a deep love for your friends and family, but you may not respect their opinions.
Which, you got to take a long look at that. And, I mean, when we're so wrapped up in going down this road of destruction or whatever this road looks like, it's hard to get any sort of perspective involved because you're just, like, got them blinders on.
Did you have anybody else telling you that maybe you needed to do something? Was anybody letting you know in any way that you were starting to, you know, live out, you know, outside of bounds?
Oh, well, for sure. I mean, I've had failed relationships, and it's like after my uncle died, he was my best friend and died tragically of cancer, and I was in a long-term relationship, and I went to some dark places where it was like drinking and smoking cigarettes at my bar in the basement, listening to Patsy Cline by myself for days on end kind of shit. And, you know, it's like my girlfriend at the time was like, hey, you should talk to somebody. But when you're in it that deep, it's really hard to break that cycle, even though you're in so much pain. And a buddy of mine actually gave me a puppy that he had at that time, and that snapped me out of it. And so the dog gave me purpose again and like saved my life. So
because the dog is not going to, you know, give a shit if you're having a problem. The dog is going to care enough to go, you know what, I'm here, but also I need food. Also, you know, I got to go outside.
You know?
So they have needs beyond things, and you've got to take care of something above and beyond whatever hole you're in.
Yep.
You know, in a way, in that respect, it is a lot like you know, people having kids and having that revelation, oh, fuck, I've got to be better.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting when it comes down to that, you know, the greater purpose, and finding that is important sometimes. But, I mean, things were going so crazy for me that I had to keep track of it in timelines. Like, well, in 2006, this was this, and then in 2007, that was that. I mean, like I said, for years and years and years, I'm, like, reacting to things, and I don't really have any chill time. It's just one chaos into another chaos. And so years of that, you just sort of figure out things to make it better at that moment.
Yeah.
And instead of reflecting and repairing, you're just sort of this soldier in the field dodging bullets and doing all you can just to stay alive.
Yeah.
And then after 15 years go by, you just say to yourself, damn, like, all right, so there's no more chaos. That's all done with. Sweet, I'm happy there's no more chaos, but then now what?
Yeah.
And so I'd like to read a book. I'd like to do the simple things in life, but then my mind is scrambled eggs, and I got all these demons shouting at me 24/7.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you've in a way created kind of a strange cycle of getting yourself out of the shit that you put yourself in. To get yourself out of your shit.
That or from outside influences, you know? Yeah. And it's really kind of how it comes down. I mean, we don't always trip and fall because we're drunk idiots. We just trip and fall because there's stones in the way sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
So, You just got, but like I said, the biggest thing I can relate is I really wish I would have dealt with more stuff head on as it was happening. But then you just sort of become this reactive being that you're like, we're just going to keep this going, man. Just, you know, tuck it in and keep it going. And unfortunately, as men, that's like what we're trained to do. Like I've used the verbiage like man up many times. You know, yeah. I grew up in a testosterone filled household, and you know, roughhousing and sports and being crazy and doing these things, and that's just the way it is. And so, like I said, you know, as I start maturing, you're just going to keep going with that. And there's really no end until you say there's an end.
Yeah.
And when we were talking about putting yourself in extreme situations, like, I love intensity. Like, an intense metal show at Harpo's, people are beating the crap out of each other, you know, that I'm right in. Or an insane cellar in Berlin where the sound system makes your eyelashes flutter. I mean, great. Let's do it. Or Native American sweat lodge ceremony where you're in there sweating to death and just like having an outer body experience. Or maybe being in the not so favorable neighborhood, or walking into that party store where you're like, man, some shit could really go down in here. You know, we pulled up one time at this party store. My friend looks at me and he's like, you go in there. I'm like, why me? He goes, you're better at putting yourself in hostile situations. I'm like, I can't argue with that.
Also, fuck you.
Yeah, well, no, that's it. So,
but through
that's kind of the way of the walk.
Coming out the other side of those things, how much rewiring have you had to do on things that have been an essential part of your personality for this long?
Yeah, the rewiring's tough. Like I was talking about the demanding change, you know. I mean, the cycle's not going to break until we want it to. You know, yeah. I've dealt with addicts. I've been an addict. And you could, you know, cross the board for any type of situation and any type of personality, and it doesn't change until you want it to change. So, like I said, at which point, it's like I haven't changed and done the things because I've really wanted to. I just have to survive, and it's not sustainable. And so it's really difficult. I mean, it's an ongoing struggle. And you know, at the drop of the hat, I'll take a bus to Chicago and have a crazy ass weekend and then go to work. And then you say to yourself, wow, that was insane. Why would I do that? Well, because it was so much fun, but now I'm so burnt out, you know, and it's like, it hurts so good.
But there are very few things in life that you can really say will enrich you more than going places and doing things. Because honestly, when all said and done, who gives a shit about stuff? You know,
no, I mean, totally.
It really doesn't matter after a while. I mean, if you, because once you start gaining things that you thought were going to make you happy, you realize pretty quickly how fast that happiness fades. And you start thinking about the memories of the places you've gone, the things you've experienced, and the things that have changed you at your core. So I would have to imagine that, you know, going off to Berlin, going off to Chicago, staying in the city in Detroit and hearing the morning call, you know, I mean, all of that, it has got to be, you know, something that keeps your feet on the earth.
Oh, to the max. I mean, as far as material possessions, man, I mean, vinyl records are cheap in Detroit, so is gunpowder and bullets, man. So it's like dynamite's cheap. What else do I need?
Yeah.
And but I really urge anybody to travel as much as possible, experience as much as possible, put yourself in uncomfortable situations. You grow outside your comfort zone. Like, no one's ever sat in their comfort zone every day and really expanded. You know, it's all about expansion here, you know. And it at the end of the day, what else are we doing?
Yeah.
I mean,
but there is a way to do that without completely destroying yourself.
Exactly.
And it sounds like you're figuring out that balance.
Right. Well, I mean, I was running for a long time. Yeah. I was for a very long time. And it's like I would get back after 2 or 3 months on the road in Europe and wherever, and I'd come home and be telling the stories, and my friends are like, wow, I really wish I could do that and this and that. I'm like, well, you can do that, but just know it's not all puppy dogs and rainbows, you know. I slept on a floor the other night, and then I was I had to catch a flight here or this and that. It's exhausting.
Yeah.
And
people assume the price that you pay is just money. It's not.
No, it's definitely not. And I mean, excess costs more than money.
Yes.
For sure. And but every time I've gone anywhere, I've taken things back and lived differently because of it. And so that's why I love where I live. I mean, I live as a minority on my block. I mean, my neighborhood, I'm a minority because I was born in the United States. I'm a minority because I speak English as my first language and I don't have immigrant parents. Yeah. I mean, so, but that's what I like. I mean, you know, when I bought this house down here, my cousin from the suburbs comes and he's like, Justin, your neighbor's wearing a dress. And I was like, yeah, you know, he's doing what he's doing. He's letting his balls hang out, leave him be. You know, I mean, I don't, when everybody looks the same and is doing the same thing, you got to take a long look and say, why am I here?
Yeah.
Because this is super boring. And that's why, I mean, for the same reason that people live in the suburbs and they don't like coming to the city is the same reason I don't like going to the suburbs and I live in the damn city, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, it irks me. And so, especially us as Americans, I mean, we are in this comfort bubble to the extreme. I mean, you know, you think it's the grass is greener on the other side. It's not. I mean, these people in other countries have hardships you would not even imagine.
Yeah.
And their everyday existence is completely different than ours. And we get in our car and we go through our drive-through and we have this and we have that. Like, oh, what's your hardship? Your AC broke? You know, fuck off. You got these people living in a hut somewhere.
If your air conditioner doesn't work in America, that's a story.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Right. Oh, no, I get it. I get it, man. Like, and it's wild. It's wild. My friend just came back from Africa, and she's just like, these people here in Detroit are not poor. You want to see poor folk, you go over here when they're living, you know, living in squalor. But they're happy and they're not medicated and they're not this and they're not that. It's tripped out.
But there's a mindset that comes along with all of that. And we're not very good at harnessing that kind of mindset of, you know, who you are and what you are is enough. You know, it's just not something that we're comfortable with in this country. It's kind of beaten out of you. In a way, from a very young age, because I mean, I almost hate to say it, but it's kind of goes against capitalism, you know, to have to be able to look at yourself and say, I'm enough.
Yeah. Oh no, we're consumers, man. We're not. Yeah. It's never enough. You need that new iPhone, or you need that new whatever, or you're not even whole. I mean, you're not even here. I mean, it's really despicable. I mean, we can go on and on about this, that, and the other thing, but at the end of the day, go for what you're passionate about.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter, you know, be passionate about it. And the more people are telling you shouldn't do something, you need to take a look at those people maybe, because, you know, everybody's armchair quarterback in this stuff over here, and it's not right. It really isn't.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's all about passion. It's all about interest, you know. Love is really what it is. And people say what they will about Detroit, but Detroit's got more heart and more love, and it will teach you that if you're here. And it's infectious. So just double down on that love and passion, and you're not going to be upset about it.
Yeah. You know, speaking of that, tell me about DJing.
DJing's interesting, man. It's really an energy exchange. So you're given energy, but you're taking energy from the dance floor and the crowd. It's like somebody told me one time that I'm a tastemaker, and I am that. And it being able to fit the puzzle pieces together and create a vibe is something important and is needed. And so it's really wild because I'm a music junkie 100%, and you have to be a music junkie to be a DJ or to be involved in this type of situation, because if you're not and you're just playing to, you know, somebody's request, then you're not really providing a service. You're a human jukebox.
Yeah.
It's
like a sommelier, you know, versus the guy at the fast food counter.
it really is. The music education here in Detroit is second to none. I mean, you go grab the average person walking down the street and they have more music knowledge than a lot of people, and we are super spoiled with that. The arts are very accessible here. I could go to the symphony for a meager budget. I could go hear world-renowned jazz music. I mean, we have the world's largest free jazz festival every Labor Day weekend. I mean, the heavy metal, we used to have the Hoedown started getting too wild and too many fights and stuff, so they regulated it and shot it up north to Pine Knob. But still, I mean, it's all here. So you take the average person, and they have more music knowledge in their pinky than most. And so you go to a barbecue or a hangout, and there's music everywhere. So
yeah,
I'm a product of my environment. And the reality is, at a very young age, I grabbed onto music, and music has sort of been my savior, but it's also been my hideout and my escape and everything else. I'm just a music junkie, and I like to spread the knowledge and turn some people on. I mean, really is what it is. You come and hear me DJ, especially overseas, and I'm going to go through like 9 genres in one night. Maybe even, I mean, there's no genre really. There's just funky and not funky. And you could draw the line in the sand with that.
Oh, yeah, and absolutely.
Like, I was in this techno club playing, and I dropped some hip-hop right in the middle, and one of the workers come up to me, and he's like, "This is not a hip-hop club. This is a techno club." And I just pointed right at him and laughed in his face. I'm like, you see that dance floor? That's all that matters.
Yeah.
So the dance floor doesn't lie.
Yeah.
And But at a very young age, I had the Princess Leia headphones on, going through my old man's record collection, and I'm a metalhead. I love me some old country, jazz, hip hop. I mean, everything across the board, really. I could find some good stuff in almost anything these days. I don't know about the mumble rap too much, but we're not here to talk negatives. We're here talking positives.
Yeah. And these are all, I mean, right now, this is one of the main positives that's been keeping you going, and using that to your advantage and cluttering out, you know, some of the other shit that was getting in your way is only going to make your bond with this wonderful thing that much more important, especially as you're starting to do the process of weeding out, because it can be painful to start, not only discovering the things within yourself that you've got to start ripping out, but, you know, discovering what it means when they're gone and you miss them because they were always there. You know, it's like losing an appendage, like a sick appendage, but it was always there. I mean, imagine having an arm with gangrene and you got to lose the arm or you're going to die. But you don't want to lose your fucking arm. It doesn't matter that it's sick. It's yours. It's part of you. It's always been there. And now you got to get rid of it, and you've got to figure out, how am I going to exist now that I cut my own fucking arm off? It is kind of like that in some ways.
Well, music brings people together, and it's brought you and I together.
Yeah.
And I missed the bananas, by the way. And
oh, I'm working on something. I'm working on something.
I know. Well, we are creators. We're always working on something.
Yeah, you're not wrong about that. That it never goes away.
It really doesn't. It doesn't matter where I am, what I'm doing. I'm always going to be creating something, whether it's relationships or events or just dabbling in this and that and the other thing, because that's what keeps us going. I mean, I don't understand how people could just be on the sidelines all the time and be so complacent. I mean, I know for sure when I start getting real dark, because I stop getting involved and start, you know, I can always tell when it's getting real ugly when I'm not really changing the radio station, so to speak. You know, you just keep going and you're like, wait a minute. So it's a constant battle.
Yeah, but you ever notice how the people who are content, their taste in music is garbage?
Dude, I don't even know what contentment is. Like, what is content? I don't understand.
I mean, I know what good for now means. I, you know? I know what being happy means. I know that it means it's going to go away at some point, and so I should treasure it. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, those things matter. I mean, embracing an unpleasant truth, I think, can bring you some joy. You know, like recognizing that there really is beauty in this world. And it's made even more beautiful by the fact that it's fleeting. You know, stop looking at your phone.
No, dude. I just made the joke the other day, like, what do you got going on? I know, you got to stare at your phone for a few hours. That's cool, you know. Make it happen. My cousin, he was going to Wayne State University, and he's like, I could commit murders in between classes and I would have no witnesses. I'm like, yeah, because everybody's staring at their phone.
Yeah, it's amazing. You've got this little black box that you carry around in your pocket. It's got all the knowledge in the universe, and nothing inside of it is going to make you feel better.
No, man. Happiness comes from within, and when it stops coming from within, you're blind, and it's not. That's not what it is. And these distractions in life only are band-aids. They really are. And it's difficult to explain to people really that haven't been through it, you know. And I feel like this is the time in our lives, you know, like when you're at the 30-somethings, the 40-somethings, you're realizing that these distractions don't work anymore.
Yeah.
So then you're forced to look within, and it gets ugly. And that's, I would say, a serious thing that happened to me, is because it's like the distractions just stopped distracting me, and I'm burnt out.
Yeah.
So, like, these distractions got me hit. And so what happens now? Well, you're just sitting there with yourself. What else is going on, you know?
Yeah. But again, I mean, you go through those phases, you know, with substances and things. And so you come to recognize that after a certain point, the dose that you were taking isn't enough. So you take more to get yourself back to right. And the same thing can be said if you're a thrill seeker, you know, or if you're a workaholic. It's the same kind of thing. You know, that hit might not be enough this time. You might need a second bump. And next thing you know, you've been awake for 18 hours and you still have to go to work.
That's what I'm saying, man. And, you know, I'm just lucky that my drug of choice was weed, and it didn't totally ruin my life. And, I mean, I hardly ever smoke now. And like I said, I was smoking them like the cigarette.
Yeah.
So it's your drug of choice, not to mention, you know, like the thrill seeker or the keeping busy or the going to shows. I mean, it'll wear off, and yeah, everything, like you said, and you get to that point where you're like, fuck, what do I do now? Yeah. And so that's, yeah, that, I mean, my friend and I were just talking about that, that it's like we're in the age group right now where it's like, you know, you're in your teens, you got a lot of shit going on, you're in your 20s, everything's new and exciting, you get into your 30s, and then all of a sudden stuff starts wearing down on you, and the distractions don't distract so much anymore, and you start looking for more, like, what else is there? Well, you and your mind is what's there. And
yeah, go find out
how you gonna deal with it. You know, it's tripped out, and I
you're going through
people.
It now, and you're figuring
you have
these
no choice.
Out.
Yeah, you have no choice. I mean, it's like live or die kind of stuff. really comes down to that. It really does. I mean, like I was talking about demanding change last summer. I mean, I was literally in a subway car in Toronto, and I hit up my buddy that was the manager of the store that I used to work at and that I used to work with him. And it was just like, hey, man, do you know of any job openings? And he's just like, you want to work here? I'm like, I think I have to. You know, I mean, like, because this shit that I'm on right now ain't getting it.
Yeah.
And coincidentally enough, you know, like, I had just gotten eaten alive by bed bugs in a hotel room, and I'm, you know, pretty much at rock bottom at this point, like spun out to the max, and got through a really excessive weekend, and on and on and on, and just when you think like it can't get any worse, oh, it does, and it will. Yeah. So, just you better figure out the escape route real quick, because it'll get worse. I mean, I thought I was at rock bottom so many different times in so many different situations, but oh no, there's more. Just keep going at your pace, and there'll be more.
Yeah,
because there's always more until you demand that change.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, you think you're bad now. Well, don't change anything. Just keep going. And, oh, boy, it'll get worse.
And that's when it gets really exciting.
Oh, yeah. Really exciting.
Let's see how I pull myself out of this one.
Yeah. Then you start contemplating suicide. And you're like, well, this is an easy way out. But then you start thinking of how selfish that would be because of all the people that get affected by your hasty decision. And then you're like, oh, I don't know if that escape hatch is going to work so well. So let's figure it out.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I found myself in a situation just, you know, maybe, God, everything was a blur. I hit a depression that was, you know, so deep that I couldn't even remember the last time I had had something that deep. And I remember thinking a lot of times, you know, oh, if I'm driving down the highway and I'm closing my eyes, that's a problem.
That's pretty ugly.
it means you're really thinking about it at that point. And so that was when I said, you know what, I've managed this the way that I know how to manage it for as long as I could. It's time to get a second opinion.
Yeah, and that second opinion is not exactly what you want to hear, that's for sure.
Right,
but
yeah.
when you're, you know, like you said, veering off that road and contemplating suicide and the other nasty things that come along with it, then you need that second opinion.
Yeah.
And like, I need an expert. Give me an expert, man.
Yeah.
And it's, you're not going to like what they want to hear or what they're telling you. And, you know, they're not going to give you what you want to hear, I should say. But it's deep. It gets real deep. I mean, I even went on meds because I didn't even know what else to do. And it was just like, I got, you know, you get to that point, you're just like, well, I don't want to be on meds, but I don't want to keep living this life that I'm at, so I'll try anything.
Yeah.
So you just sort of got to take it one step at a time at that point.
Yeah. The way I had it explained to me was, you know, if you're not making the right chemicals on your own, store-bought's fine.
Yeah, well, you got to do what you got to do at that point. I mean,
exactly. And then, you've got to manage your shit. You know, live another day.
Well, as far as store-bought, man, you've been self-medicating for how long anyway? So it's this store-bought versus that store-bought, right?
Yeah, what's the difference? The difference is this one might work.
It's tripped out. Yeah. It really is.
So how are you holding up now? Do you have a good therapist that you're talking to?
Yeah. I've been hitting the therapy since October, so we're going on like 9 months or so, and that's going pretty well. And I mean, it's a struggle. Like, it was a struggle this morning, baby. I get dark in the morning, and then it gets to the point where you don't even want to go to sleep because you know it's going to start all over the next day.
Yeah.
And that starts getting pretty fucking insane where you're like, I'm at a good place right now, so let's just stay awake and keep it going. Yeah. Because I know when that reset button hits, you know, like on the old Nintendo NES, you hit that reset button when the screen freezes, you know, it's tripped. And yeah. So it's a constant struggle, man. I feel like I've definitely come out of it and living a good life right now. But it is a struggle. The mornings are the toughest for me at times. But you got no choice, man. I mean, yeah. what's the alternative, right?
Well, I mean, I've said it 100 times. It's like you wake up in the morning and you have two choices. You can kill yourself or you can have a cup of coffee. And for now, I go with coffee.
Oh, man. It's pretty delicious until that would get you all maniaed out because you're all fired up on the coffee. And
yeah, I probably shouldn't be. I found out I'm genetically predisposed to have a caffeine sensitivity. I'm bipolar, so I'm prone to fits of mania and whatnot, but I've come to recognize all of those things, and I've dealt with them long enough that, you know, it's kind of weird. I'm able to recognize that when it's happening, but it's not something that I came by easily. It was a difficult, long process getting to the point where I could function like a human being does, you know, without succumbing to either the depths of my darkness or thinking I'm Jesus. You know, you have to kind of learn where the edges of reality are so that you've got something to hang on to when you can't trust yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I've never that's the thing. I've seen full-blown bipolar and I've touched on it in my own world, but I've never gone fully there.
Yeah.
And like I said, I'll have little spouts of manic behavior and I just sort of think like I'm productive and I'm busy.
But see, that's using your powers for good. That's kind of what I'm getting at. It's like if you recognize, this is kind of manic, but I'm going to do something with it. You know, I personally don't think that that's necessarily a negative. As long as you're doing something productive with it and you're not like, you know, trying to strip and varnish somebody else's boat, you know,
like right.
If you're doing something good with it, like making music or traveling or hanging out with friends, you know, things like that, making memories, creating art, those are all worthwhile pursuits and could probably benefit from being slightly askew.
Yeah, no, I'm with that. But the upside comes with the down.
Yeah.
And then for me...
Man, that down is a motherfucker.
It's pretty brutal. I'll hit that wall, and then all of a sudden you're just like, that was brutal. But I mean, until you really see somebody with true mania and true depression, then it sort of puts it in perspective. But that doesn't mean that you can't give the validation to what you're going through.
No,
you
absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? Like that.
I mean, you don't have to see somebody who's had their leg amputated, to know what it feels like to have your leg hurt. You know, I mean, if you get hit in the leg with an axe, you're going to feel it. That's your pain. You own that. That's your experience of the world. And that's exactly where you're from. It's going to inform you and how you feel. It's not a game of, you know, win or lose. Like you can't quantify pain and things of that nature. You really can't. It's more or less, what is your threshold? Who are you as a human being? What have you been through? Do you have a thick skin? Do you have a thin skin? Have you ever been hurt? What do you do with that hurt? There's so many different factors. You can't ever tell somebody that they're not hurting. You know, you just can't.
No, you absolutely
so
can't.
So it's not really a matter of saying that, you know, one person's depression is more valid than another person's depression. Depression fucking sucks. And I don't care how much it is or how much you have or where it came from. It sucks. Especially right. when it's yours.
Yeah, I mean, but until you take control, you know, you got to take that wheel and say, okay, I'm going to steer it this way now. And, yeah. and you have the power. Yeah. Only you.
But it's tough to get to that place.
Oh, it's super ugly.
And you have to want to get to that place. Because it's just, no one's going to fix you. No one's going to ride in with a solution. Ultimately, you've got to do the work.
That's it, man. It's just like addiction, you know? Like, you can't stop the addiction until you want to stop the addiction. It doesn't even matter how far you fall and how deep you go, that until you take that step, then it's just going to keep the same. And like, insanity is keep doing the same shit and expecting different results.
Yeah.
Like, okay. You know, I mean, it literally took a good friend of mine to sort of be my coach through it and was like, hey man, what are you doing with yourself? Why are you doing this? Like, okay, you're doing this right now. What's the game plan? What's the outlook on a month from now? This and that. And you got to just grab the bull by the horns on that one. Because nothing's going to change until you demand it.
Yeah,
it really is.
Well, and it sounds like you've definitely stepped up and said, I demand change.
It was sink or swim time for me. I mean, I was just overindulging. I mean, you know, you talk about it living in the intense situations, and then it just, when is it intense enough? Yeah. Like, that you could just keep going with it. Like, well, I'm at this club right now, and there's a guy swimming in a pool of piss, and I just took a leak in that pit, in that pool, to fill it up a little bit more. And you know, we've been doing this for how many hours, and it's noon, and it's like, okay, well, this is the norm now. Okay, yeah. Great. So if that's the norm, what's the next step?
I've well, just added a new color to my reality.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like it could just keep going. Yeah. And so at which point are you making a healthy decision for yourself? Because it might be fun at the time, but man, it sure isn't sustainable and it's not healthy. So it's time to take a step back and really take a look at it and say, okay, well, I'm here now. Where do I really want to be?
Yeah.
And just strive towards where you want to be. And I mean, people get lost. It's just like we're told, it's like we're in this comparison world where you're constantly comparing yourself to the next guy and what he's got and his online profile and whatever, you know, the glitz and the glamour. Well, he's going through shit too, man. He's just not showing it. Yeah. So you know, like living in this comparison world is going to get you nowhere. So like you were saying about being okay with what you have and what you're bringing to the table and your daily experiences, I mean, because you're going to keep striving for more and more and more, and then all of a sudden you're sunk.
Yeah.
So that's no way to be. And I mean, just figure it out. What more is there to say? You know, if you're around people that love you and you love them, and you're open, honest communication, and you're in a healthy environment, then you can't ask for more than that.
Yeah,
really. And so, figure out your passion, and if your passion is helping other people live better lives and bring smiles to other people's faces. Like, I don't care what you do in life. Just don't be an asshole and don't fuck up somebody else's good time. And then it's fine. It doesn't really matter at that point. So it's just keep grabbing that smile. And it doesn't always have to be party time, or it doesn't always have to be anything. But striving for the balance, like a good friend of mine says, I just strive to be in the middle. He's like, I want to ride that middle ground as long as I possibly can. Yeah. And he's absolutely right, because, you know, in the middle is really where we want to be. And when
you can visit the edges when you want to.
right. I was running hard and living on the edge for a long time, and then the edge is normal. So then anything less than that, you're like, wait a minute, I'm not even a hole right now. So
yeah,
it's really trippy when you think about it. But I'm pretty happy with where I'm at right now. I've accomplished some serious goals this last year and gained a lot of perspective. And I still might be doing certain things, but after I'm done doing these things, I'm going to reflect on them and say, okay, well, this happened and that was okay. And this is where I'm at now. And how did that make me feel? Did that help me or did that hinder me? Or, you know, where am I at? What's going on with that? So, I mean, it's okay to visit the edge, and it's okay to kick back. But as long as it's feeding you, and you're not just doing it blindly.
Yeah.
And for a long time, just keep racing and overdrive. It's you're gonna spawn out for sure. So. But I really appreciate what you got going on, man. I mean, after Char told me about this, I started listening, and I've been just devouring the podcasts, and I really appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, it's important. And I mean, when we start going into these holes, we start isolating, and we feel like we're alone, and we want to be alone even. So there's a big world out there, and there's a lot of people going through a lot of things, and to be able to learn and communicate is important. So I can't thank you enough for the perspective and what you're doing.
I can't thank you enough for agreeing to talk to me on this.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I mean, people love getting me on their podcast because I love to talk a lot of shit, and I'm incapable of being embarrassed. It's a great life skill. So, I mean, I was at a date with somebody one time, and I told them that I'm incapable of being embarrassed, and they're like, well, what if I stand up right now and say this guy sucks dick? I was like, well, maybe I'll get a couple takers or something. I don't know.
Maybe this night is about to get a lot more interesting.
You know, who knows? You never know. But just step outside yourself, man. It's not that deep. Like, it's really not. I mean, it's not a big deal until you make it a big deal, and until you realize that. It just sort of roll with the punches and go with the flow as best you can. I mean, that's the biggest thing about Detroit that I feel like it teaches people, because we're in a lot of hardships and a lot of different things, but then it gives you perspective. You're just like, okay, well, when I moved into my house, I didn't have streetlights for a couple of years, but I was okay. So the neighbors and everybody just turns their porch lights on and rolls with it. You know, it's not the end of the world. And it just, we have this level of chill here And all these new Detroiters that are coming in are trying to change our chill to meet what they just came from. And it's like, bro, you just moved here from wherever because you wanted to be here. You identified with our culture, and now you're trying to change our culture. Let's think about that for a second, you know? Like, okay, you got some noisy neighbors. Well, go, you know, knock on the door and have a chat with them, and you'll figure it out. It's not that big of a deal. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
come in and add. Don't try to take away.
Right, exactly. And so we get that that slogan, like, Detroiters don't know how to act. But honestly, I feel like we are way more evolved than most, just because it's not that big of a deal, you know. Just do your thing and have a smile. It's really not that deep. And the level of freedom, it will let you grow. And I mean, you know, the less rules, the best. And rules here are kind of like more like suggestions in a way. And that's okay. You know, we suggest you to do certain things, and if you go outside the lines a little bit, then that's fine, you know. But just be cool and everything will be okay.
Well, I think that's probably a good way to be no matter where you are.
Yeah, I know, man. But you know, these places, they got their rule book in their back pocket, and they wanna cite Section 8 on you every now and then. It's like, wait, that don't get it. That don't get it, man.
For it.
Oh, yeah, right. I'll tell you. But I just, you know, travel as much as you can. Take away with the finer points and bring them back to your life and evolve. You know, we're in this constant evolution, man. And when you start doing the same stuff every day and you're complacent and you just say, okay, well, this is boring. What else is there, right?
There's a lot, but it's up to you to figure out what it is and whether or not it's something you want or whether you're ready to accept it. But, yeah, you know,
acceptance is tough.
Yeah, it always is. Thanks for talking to me, man.
Hey, you know, it's my pleasure, brother. And, I hope that, some people take away something positive from this conversation. You could, get at me on social media stuff. You know, I'm hiding under a rock somewhere, but you just keep turning them over. You'll find me. And come to Detroit. It'll change your life, man. Hit me up. I'll show you some stuff that'll flip your wig a little bit.
Awesome. You hear that? Go to Detroit. Get your wig flipped. It'd be good for you. If you want to find out more about Distant Lover, you can go to Facebook, and it's Distant Lover 313 is where you can find them at. As for me, you can find me kicking around. My solo music project, Beast 4, is going to be playing a gig, opening up for Alexander and the Big Sleep, August 31st at Three Kings in Denver, Colorado. And that's all I got for this week, everybody. I am trying to hold myself together with super glue, duct tape, and coffee. And with your support, honestly, that's been the best thing for me through all of this. So as always, don't kill yourselves out there.